Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Aaron Newcomb joins me. We're going to be talking about Twine, writing your own interactive fiction. Looks really cool. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and once again, time for Twit's audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It's only going to take a couple of minutes, really. That's all. Just go to twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. Your anonymous feedback will help us make Twit even better. And thanks for your continued support.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Aaron Newcomb, episode 420, recorded February 7th, 2017, Twine. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by GoCD, an on-premise open-source continuous delivery server by ThoughtWorks. GoCD gives you complete control of and visibility into your deployments across multiple teams. To learn more about GoCD, visit gocd.io/twit for a free download. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, libre, open-source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz. Merlin at stoneage.com bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, little projects, projects you may be using every day, not aware of it, projects you may want to download right after this show and play with it. I bet today is going to be one of those. Joining me this week, my lovely and talented co-host, Aaron Newcomb. Aaron, welcome back to the show.
Hey, that's a twofer, lovely and talented. Yeah, thanks for having me back, Randall.
You get all the points. You get all the points. And we were going to have Guillermo, but he had to drop out at the last minute. So thank you, Aaron, also for stepping up quickly at the last second to be able to take this show over. I appreciate that. Where are you speaking to us from? I bet it's your secret den, right?
It is. It's my secret lair, which you can't see because there's a white line. Remember those old 80s shows where there's like a white line in the room because the two kids can't get along on the Brady Bunch or something like that? So they put the white line in the middle. So that's what you can see. You can see my wife's side of the secret lair here. You can't see my side, which has all the cool stuff, little gadgets and things like that. See, I just put that together. I just designed the whole thing. It's so cool. So I've got the cool stuff over here. She's got the book. She was a philosophy major, so she's got all the books over there. But what can you do?
Exactly. And I am speaking to you back again in Santa Monica for the first time in about 6 or 7 weeks, I think, somewhere about 8 weeks maybe, at my main client, ZipRecruiter. I may sound a little bit different than I have before. I'm actually using the Blue Raspberry, a portable mic that mimics the Blue Yeti that I've used for a lot of the shows. But I think you can also be able, unfortunately, to pick up a little bit of my keyboarding. So I apologize for that this week. We're going to work out a way to try to make that a little bit less sound next time. But I'll try not to type heavy. You know, it's like I always like to laugh that, people that talk about strong typing in programming languages. And I say, I've tried strong typing, but I nearly broke my keyboard. So hopefully today I won't be doing any of that. But we have a really wonderful guest on this week. We're going to be talking to Chris Klimas, who is going to talk to us about Twine. Twine is, where I saw the little quote here, is an open source tool for telling interactive nonlinear stories. Now, if you recall way back to October of last year, we talked to a couple of people about the Interactive Fiction Contest, I should say. And interactive fiction being the kinds of things like stories where you interact with primarily a text-based interface and you pick up things and you travel to places, you head directions, you interact with NPCs, non-player characters, to try to see, to actually further a story along. But it's used for a lot more than that. In fact, the whole interactive fiction thing was really amazing when I got into it there. But Twine is software, free software, open source software, used to implement interactive fiction stories. And it's had quite a bit of development since back in 2009 when Chris first created it, and a lot of other people have gotten involved with it. We're talking to Chris about the whole how this all works out. So what do you know about this so far, Aaron?
I know a little bit about it. I have one of our members at the Makerspace that I founded actually loves this, and he was working at a school system, and he was actually I don't know if he ever did it, but he was talking about integrating Twine with the classroom to make just to make things fun for the kids so that they could go in to the classroom and do something in there, and then it would like add to the story, or they could change the story and things. So I know a little bit about it, and I'm really interested in it because I love this whole idea of developing a story this way and making it interactive. I think it's really awesome.
Yeah, and there's also some elements of this, too, that actually overlap a little bit with Gamergate, but I will probably save that for one of the surprise questions later as we get into the show. But before we do that, I do have a very important message, because this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by GoCD. GoCD is an on-premise, open-source, continuous delivery server created by ThoughtWorks. With GoCD's comprehensive pipeline modeling, you can model complex workflows across multiple teams with ease. With its parallel and sequential execution, GoCD can easily configure dependencies for fast feedback and on-demand deployment. This value stream map lets you track a change from commit to deploy at a glance. GoCD's real power is in the visibility it provides over your end-to-end workflow, so you get complete control of and visibility into all your deployments across the organization. GoCD also offers complete customization for your software's individual needs. GoCD will perform tests written in most languages or frameworks. Their test reporting will tell you exactly which change set and on which platform a test started breaking. Say goodbye to deployment panic and hello to consistent, predictable deliveries. GoCD is the best continuous integration and deployment tool you probably never heard of. To learn more about GoCD and for a free download, visit gocd.io/twit. That's gocd.io/twit. Commercial support and enterprise add-ons, including disaster recovery, are also available. And we thank GoCD for their support of Floss Weekly. Let's go ahead and bring Chris on the show. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hi, great to be here.
Great. And where are you speaking to us from?
I'm coming to you from scenic Baltimore on the East Coast.
Baltimore, wow. So that's 3 hours in advance there. Can you tell us I'm not going to get political here. Can you tell us what the latest stories are from 3 hours in advance? But we'll probably find out quick enough. It's all that way. So I gave sort of the overview of what I believe interactive fiction and particularly what Twine is about. But why don't you go ahead and give us sort of the, fill in the story. Give us a 30,000-foot view of interactive fiction and then and how Twine helps facilitate that.
Yeah, absolutely. You could think of interactive fiction as having two kind of main threads. The first is what you think of with like the games like that came out of Infocom in the 80s, where you have a prompt, you type in a command like go north, get a lamp, whatever. But there's also sort of this parallel thread that's choice-based. And this sort of most popular example of that was Choose Your Own Adventure, those books, also during the 80s. And the main difference between them, obviously, is that with Twine and other choice-based fiction, your options are at least on their face a little bit more limited. But it gives you a little bit more room to do more storytelling, I think, in my opinion. And it offers a whole bunch of different other possibilities for kind of expressing yourself, that kind of thing. Twine is sort of like kind of one branch of the whole tree. I would say tools like Inform or TADS, they live on the other side of it. Obviously, we're friends, but they're different kind of approaches to things.
Okay, cool. And so you started Twine back to provide technologies to do this with it. Was there anything else open source that you could use before this?
In the field of choice-based stuff, I'm not really sure. At least I wasn't aware of it. There obviously was a rich sort of background in parser-based stuff, the stuff that type in the command kind of interactive fiction that there was always this. At the time, there was a very strong open source community around those kinds of tools. But there probably were choice-based stuff. I just wasn't aware of it.
Now maybe I missed the distinction here, but how is choice-based stuff different from parser-based stuff?
Simple example. So like you are, in a Zork or something like that, a parser game. There's usually, you get a description of where you're standing oftentimes, and it asks you, what do you want to do next? Do you want to go in this direction or another? And so it's up to you to type it in. So you have to actually type in go north, for example. Whereas choice-based stuff, those choices are presented to you, right? And so like at first glance, it's like, oh, that sounds much simpler. And it is actually like to build a very simple choice-based game takes a short amount of time. Whereas to do something in parser, you have to think about everything that the player is going to type in, that kind of thing.
Okay, so maybe an easier way to look at this would be, a choice-based system, and actually specifically the way Twine implements it, or at least the basic parts of it, is you have a web page, and on the web page you have maybe one or two or three links that either advance the story or advance a choice in the story. And this is sort of more mimics the old choose your own adventure books, where it would say, if you want to go north, go to page 47. If you want to pick up the apple first, go to page 48. Is that a fair characterization?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Okay. And so how did you come about to say, well, okay, well, I want to have something that I can do choice-based development in? I mean, what motivated you, and how did you get started?
Oh, sure. So story starts maybe when I was, we'll say, 9 years old. I don't actually know for sure. But we had this funny sort of tradition in my family where, because obviously, like, I did not have a lot of money at my disposal back then. And so my parents would say, like, okay, this present right here is, you're going to give that to dad or mom or whatever at Christmas, and your job is to wrap it. But we went to the store and bought it for you. And so it happened that year, it was a copy of the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy game was produced by Infocom. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so it was my job to wrap this present. And so it was the kind that kind of came in like a slipcase, almost like a record. And so I could open up, I was feeling, I guess, slightly mischievous, and I decided, hey, I'm going to look at the instruction manual to this before and figure out, like, I have no idea what an interactive fiction game is. So I'm sitting there, like, roughly, like, you know, nearly the night before Christmas, wrapping this present, like, reading this very strange little tome and thinking, this game sounds really cool. that was kind of like the moment that I really got into interactive fiction. Obviously, it took me some time to come back to it. It was really when there was an internet community in the 90s that I came back to it and saw how many cool tools there were already out there to produce it. And I got into using Inform. That's one of the main ones for producing those parser games, those Zork-likes. Right. And I built a couple of games with Inform that I enjoyed doing, but I felt sort of constrained in a weird way. And I felt like I wasn't able to really 100% express myself the way I would have liked to with these tools and with this format. And so at that time, I was also looking at, there's a bunch of hypertext sort of, or literary hypertext that were created mostly, I think, towards the late 80s, early 90s. And I was looking at those and kind of finding them really interesting. And so it really actually, so the final moment sort of where it finally kind of crystallized for me. Well, actually, I should say also before that, I started playing with this other open source tool called TiddlyWiki. I don't know if you guys have seen that before, but no. For me, it like blew my mind. Because the basic conceit of it was that it was this web page that would self-modify. Which at the time I was like, I don't understand how a web page could do that. And so I was amazed by it, like on like a pure technical level. But I also was playing with it to try to tell stories with it, where it was like, okay, you know, it's like a wiki basically encapsulated in a single web page that you can just edit to your heart's content. And it was really cool. TiddlyWiki still exists as a project now. I should clarify too. Although like the thing that made it self-modifiable, as far as I know, like that was kind of a security hole in browsers, and they've since closed that. It's still possible. It just takes more setup. You have to actually install something. Whereas back in the day, TiddlyWiki, you just opened a web page and went to town, which I found really compelling. At any rate, so I was playing around with this, and I wanted something that would work better for me, because it was sort of like, to me, I always describe the experience as like I was basically designing a labyrinth from the inside, which is great, except when you get lost, and it's really easy to get lost. And so I wanted something that would visualize things a little bit more clearly. And so at the time, I was also doing a graduate program in user interface at University of Baltimore, which I think is great, by the way. I'll give it a tiny shout out. And so I was thinking a lot about user experience and user interface and stuff like that. And I thought of Twine as a thing that I could do for my graduate thesis. And then I got impatient and I just started doing it. You know, obviously, it sort of went on from there. Like I think you alluded to in the introduction, Twine was not super popular right out of the gate. And part of that was that I think I was thinking of it as mainly a writing tool and not necessarily a game design tool. And so there were folks out there. One of the biggest ones, or in the earliest, was Anna Anthropy, who really recognized that it was something that you could use to design games or game-like experiences. And then from there, the community really grew. And it was a thing that it's obviously really cool, obviously, how it has grown. It's something that I really didn't anticipate, to be honest. I also didn't really think of it as necessarily a tool to be used in education, but it obviously has become that, and that it really amazes me. Because it is the one thing that I think I did have sort of baked into the original DNA of Twine was that it needed to be as accessible as possible. And so to create something in Twine, you don't need to program, really. You type stuff in, and if you want to add a link, it's basically Wikipedia syntax. You put two square brackets around it, and ta-da, you have a choice. And that's kind of all you need to build something very simple right out of the gate. It's something you can teach. It was, you know, a crazy moment where I was at a Coder Dojo meetup, which is sort of like a kids coding kind of event. And there's like a 9-year-old or 10-year-old girl sitting there working with Twine. I'm like, this is something that I'd always wanted to have happen, but to actually see that achieved was amazing. But at any rate, it's also something that scales up so that if you want to add logic or programming or code to it, you totally can. You can extend it with JavaScript, CSS, all that good stuff. There's also sort of simplified scripting languages that people have built for it so that for the common stuff, like if you want to remember that something happened in the past, and like if you found a key back in, you know, 20 minutes ago, it will let you open a door, that kind of stuff. That there are super simplified scripting languages to let you do that too.
So, Chris, can I take this and also integrate it into the physical world, like with code and things like that? I mean, that's kind of what I thought. What interested me in this when I first heard about it is that you could create something that you know, oh, someone flipped on a light switch, and then that activates something in the story, or it completes the logical choice in the story. So could you have a physical, not just a textual representation, but a physical representation as a choice as well?
Yeah, sort of. I guess the best example I can give you is something that someone actually built. And I believe the guy's name was Jerry Belich, I believe. And I believe the project's name was the Choosetron. But I hope I got that right. But at any rate, it was actually like a machine, like a physical machine. I don't know all the details of how he built it, but he used Twine as sort of the design tool for it. And what it is like a thermal printer, like you would see like at a cash register. And it prints out the text of like, okay, here, you know, you're standing in a room. Do you want to go north, south, whatever? And each one has a number. You actually push a number on the keypad, and then it prints out the next sort of step. And the cool thing is at the end of it, you get an actual printout, like an actual receipt of the game that you've played, which I think is kind of nifty. So yeah, it outputs to HTML and uses JavaScript under the hood. So anything you can do with JavaScript, you can do in Twine with enough determination.
Yeah, yeah, because I can see this being really a cool way to implement like a puzzle room or something where you're trapped in a room and you just get this, you know, brief instructions, basically, you know, one of those things where you have an hour to figure out the puzzle or break out of the room or whatever. Like I can see like hooking up to a book, like, you know, one of the choices is, you know, choose the red book or choose the blue book, you know, and you pull one of them and then that's the right choice and it takes you somewhere else. So it sounds like that might be possible, again, like you say, with enough work. Has anyone ever tried to implement it in that kind of way, combining it with like a puzzle room kind of setup?
I haven't heard that, no. I mean, I'm sure that people have tried it, I bet. the other thing that it's really good at, I think, is planning things. So like you could use, for example, like if you're planning out the flow of a puzzle room or any kind of game-like activity, I feel like Twine is a great prototyping tool for that because it's very simple to sort of chart it out. And people have, like, even like inside the video game industry, they've used Twine as a prototyping tool. Like, for example, Lifeline, which was a pretty popular iOS game, that was entirely charted out in Twine ahead of time. And people have, so it's sort of like it can be used as both a prototyping and an actual tool for constructing stuff directly.
Mm-hmm. Well, I may try this out. I may work with it a little bit and see if I can get it. Because the other thing that occurs to me, and I'm kind of getting excited about this now. The other thing that occurs to me is you can do things like time travel, and then you could use physical elements in the room maybe to reflect either things that are projected or something. So like if one of your choices is, you know, causes you to go back in time, all of a sudden stuff on the walls, like the visual representation changes to like the 60s or something. And you could have a really cool experience with that. Not to go too far with that, I grew up on these text-based kind of games, TRS-80 color computer. So I played games like Bedlam and Rakatoo, and I think there was one called Cave Hunt. And, you know, I even programmed my own. That was my first programming experience ever in my life, was wanting to program up one of these text games. And then later on in college, MUDs became popular. So you could go online and have an interactive experience with other people playing these kind of text-based games. And I'm kind of – that leads me to my next question. That was a long lead, wasn't it? That leads me to my next question, though, is how – if I have a group of people, and I'm thinking kind of like education or maybe like you say, in the gaming world, kind of prototyping, I mean, how easy is it to – have multiple users creating one story? Could I assign, hey, you're going to get this story arc. I'm going to assign that story arc to you, writer one, and I'm going to assign this story arc to you, writer two, and then everything kind of works together, or how does that work?
Yeah, right now it doesn't do a great job of that, to be honest. And that's something that I wish that I kind of wanted to expand on in the future. And because right now, like Twine was really, it started off as a desktop app, like a straight up, you download it. You know, you work on your computer, you have a file sitting on your hard drive corresponding to your story. And, you know, you collaborate by emailing that file to somebody else. But in the 2.0 version of Twine, we made it entirely web-based, which my goal was really, because at that point, tablets were really starting to hit popularity-wise. And so I wanted to make sure Twine was playable or usable on those tablets. And it has a nice side effect also. You can go to the website, which looks like it's right below my face right now. If you go to it, you can try out Twine right away. You don't have to actually download anything. But because obviously now that it's web-based, there is also a downloadable version if you want to use it, but you can use it directly. If you're an educator or something like that, you don't have to get permission from your IT administrator before using it, since it's just a web page, hopefully. at any rate, but yeah, now that it's web-based, there are obviously a ton more possibilities for collaboration. And it's something that I'm hoping that we're going to be able to have a better story on soon, because you're right. I mean, that is one of the big use cases of this right now, is that when folks are, and it's true, whether you're a classroom or a small group working together, whatever, it should be possible to edit stuff together. And I think it would bring a lot of value to it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so too. I can see this being a huge resource in a creative writing class or something, to say, you know, just like we did back in, you know, back when we played those MUDs online, that the cool thing was, you know, you could become an admin and create your own section of the world, right? That was your own. So you might do something that's Star Wars themed, you know, and someone walks through a portal and all of a sudden they're in the middle of some sort of Star Wars universe where they came from Camelot before that, you know? And I think it would lend itself to this, as well as just general writing exercises, even for business and things. So think about that. It's a new feature idea. Can you give us some more examples of the ways people have used Twine? You gave us the one example. I think that's awesome, the guy that did the thermal printed thing. But what are the more popular examples that you talk about when you're giving examples of how people use Twine?
Mm-hmm. I mean, so commercially speaking, if you've ever played the game Firewatch, the introduction of it is text-based. It has a little prologue that kind of explains the backstory of the main character. The sort of the story behind that actually is that the writer of the game, sort of as an exercise just to get a better sense of who these characters were and stuff like that, he wrote a Twine story just walking through this. And then I think the dev team, I've never spoken to them directly, but the sense I got was that the dev team, they thought the more and more it was around, the more they were happy with it. And they decided to incorporate it in the final game. Actually, that is the playable. So like when you start off playing Firewatch and kind of read stuff and make choices, that's actually, it's not actually Twine behind the scenes, but it was designed in Twine. That's the other kind of go-to example of things that you may have encountered in real life that were based on Twine. As far as other interesting examples, I want to say Andy McClure and some other person whose name I'm forgetting actually built a multi-user or multiplayer Twine called Naked Chase. Oh, Porpentine. That's the other person. Person who goes by that name. And it was kind of complicated, it looked like, to set up. It's actually like a Python server that kind of merges the inputs together of multiple people. So as you're playing this game, I think it was done for, I want to say, Ludum Dare, one of the competitions. It was sort of like as you play it, like you'll hear like, oh, there's someone else in the game. You never actually interact with people directly, I don't believe, but you like they have an effect on the environment that you play in, which is really nifty. And I was really impressed by like just the engineering effort that went into it, because Twine was not really designed necessarily to be played in a networked environment either. And I guess I'll footnote for a second and give a shout out to Andrew Plotkin's Sultani, is a project that I think, in my opinion, at least borrows some of what Twine has and tries to put it in like a multi-user or multiplayer environment. It's very similar to a MUD, actually. It sort of has Myst trappings because he's a big Myst fan. But it really doesn't have any, like, you can use it for whatever purpose you want. It's sort of almost like a modern re-envisioning of a MUD. And I think it's really cool. And unfortunately, I think it's a little bit under-recognized, I guess, in the world. I think it's really cool. But anyway, other Twine stuff. I mean, like, the thing I think, as far as technology goes, I mean, the one other thing I can point to is that, and it's not even really a technology, it's more just like an implementation thing, and I just am sort of intrigued by it. It was that Anthropy wrote a game called 90 Seconds at the End of the World, I believe, or Queers at the End of the World, I think. But the game, you can only play the game for 90 seconds at a time. Whatever you choose, like, because the world is ending is sort of the backstory. No matter what you choose, no matter how fast you click or whatever, you only get 90 seconds to play it. And it's kind of like, I really like the kind of the effect of the, like, it's not something that you could achieve in a choose your own adventure story, obviously, because you don't like, it's not like start a stopwatch, now begin reading kind of thing. That wouldn't work in real life. But I think that's kind of nifty. It reminds me a little bit of, I can't remember the name of it. William Gibson wrote a story, an electronic story, where it would erase about, I believe, his father and possibly the death of his father. And after you read it, this was back in the 90s, I think, or early 80s. And after you read it the first time, it would erase itself off of the disk. So it was the kind of like limited lifetime kind of thing that I think was kind of interesting.
Yeah, definitely. Those all sound like really cool examples. I'll have to try out that other one too, Sultani or whatever it is. I'll have to take a look at that and see. Because there could be a huge market for this kind of thing. More interactive stories, like you say, as people have tablets and phones with them now, everywhere they go. I mean, I can see using this like on the train or on the ferry or something, or, you know, on my commute on the way to work, as long as I'm not driving. I can see using this. Yeah.
I was going to say, there are actually people who have been exploring using it for with voice-based stuff. And so, like, your driving to work kind of metaphor could totally be a thing. I think there were like limited games. I can't remember the names of them off the top of my head, but obviously, in an age where you can do voice control, like Siri and what have you, all of a sudden being able to control a game by your voice only and interact with it through audio only is totally, totally viable now.
Yeah, especially like with things like, let's just say voice recognition products. So I don't trigger anybody's home product that they use, either from Amazon or from that other company. It's funny that we have to be careful of that now, but especially with those kind of tools sitting in your living room or around you, it would be easy. I know my kids love just to say, you know, name of device, tell me a story, or name of device, you know, let's play a game or something like that. And that would be really cool to integrate this. Have people built, let me get to a question from the chat room first, actually, before I get too far into this. Jonathan Bennett, who obviously is a co-host here on the program, was asking about using Git for the back end as a potential way to store the source as well, as that could lead to multiple people being able to contribute as well, because that's what Git is really, really great for. Have you ever thought about using Git for that?
Oh, sure. Yeah, definitely. I think that I mean, you can, you definitely can use Git or whatever source controller you like, because they're just flat text files. And I think Git would do a pretty good job with it. It's just a question to me of like, I feel like my the main audience for Twine probably has never used Git before. At least those are the people that I try to target, you know, like, again, the school kids and stuff like that. And not to say that learning Git is not a useful life skill, because it probably is if you're going to be in the tech world. But, you know, it's sort of a scary thing right out of the gate to be like, okay, let's learn some basic commands about merging and you know, that kind of thing. And the difference between like fast forward merging and the other kind, and like, you know, that kind of thing is a little bit, it's a deep pool, obviously. And so I think, and the other thing I really would like to get to is a real-time editing functionality, where you are, you know, you drag something around and on your friend's screen, it drags or it moves with them or at the moment that you drag it. And I was playing with, Mozilla has this really cool technology called together.js. And it is sort of, it does that. But what I discovered was that, man, this is actually a significant kind of engineering effort. It's going to be tricky to, in my opinion, it's totally worth it, but it's going to take a lot of work to make it really work seamlessly.
Well, you just need to enlist more people to help you out with this thing. And that's part of why today's show is so important, just so that we can reach another, you know, a few dozen at least sets of eyeballs to take care of that. One of the things that surprised me as I was playing with this or looking at it initially was that it's really like, I mean, and one way to describe it for people that know that have the background is it's a smart wiki. It's a wiki in the sense that any given page, you just simply add links to other pages, and then you click on those links to then start filling those out. Except there's this added layer of programming on top of that. Were you initially inspired by the wiki model as the way to create things?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Because that's why it really its direct ancestor was TiddlyWiki, and so. You know, the syntax is borrowed from there. And TiddlyWiki actually also lets you add code to I guess, wikis or TiddlyWikis or whatever you want to call them. It wasn't really as foregrounded because TiddlyWiki is mostly an information organizing tool, although people use it for all kinds of purposes. And so there isn't really quite as much of a need in most cases to do programming in TiddlyWiki. And so it was sort of like with this, yeah, you definitely want the ability to code stuff and otherwise make it more dynamic, I guess is the best way to put it. And that definitely, I mean, and that's the interesting part is that there are now, like, there are different kind of, like, runtime engines, basically, for Twine nowadays. And so, like, there is sort of, like, for example, like, Harlow, which is the name of the default runtime, takes a sort of quasi-functional programming approach to it now. But it never really says that explicitly. So, again, it's, like, one of those, like, if you want to learn programming, this might be a decent way to start with it. Yeah, it's just different. I mean, it's basically almost like different layers of expertise and like what your comfort level is. For example, so like if you're a web developer and you feel like you know JavaScript and CSS inside and out, we have an engine that will just let you kind of get out of your way and create stuff with it.
Well, and I noticed that in telling an interactive story and telling a choice based story. There's the basic mechanics of being an author, of just simply having, you know, a thought process that would lead to production. And I also, I'm distracting myself with a question here. So is this the kind of thing that I would use during the development of my story, or would I have to completely storyboard my story before approaching this?
I think it could work either way. To be honest, I mean, it is something that is like you could start kind of from scratch and just start popping boxes down and laying things out right in Twine. And lots of people do that, honestly. I myself, when I write stuff with Twine, oftentimes I'll sketch out stuff on pencil and paper because I'm old school that way. And then once I feel like I've gotten sort of a general flow of things, then I'll actually go into Twine and start laying things out. But it is designed to be like very visual. And so you can very easily see like, okay, this is the structure of things. Here's a bunch of where a bunch of like splits happen. And then it merges back in or whatever structure you have. And so it is very much, it could, like, you don't even necessarily, like I was saying earlier, it could be used strictly as a planning tool.
Okay. And so one of the things I then saw is looking at the default programming language there is that, first off, it's Turing complete. Has anybody built Towers of Hanoi in Twine?
I don't actually know. I have not seen that. I bet you could, though.
It definitely looks Turing complete. So, because there's choice and iteration, that's all you really need. So, Towers of Hanoi is always the first thing that happens once you have something that's Turing complete and you get a computer scientist somewhere near it. So, maybe I'll have to do that as my first full Twine thing. Because what I see, of course, is that there's data, there's structured data, there's good multi-way ifs, subroutines that I could sort of see there, macros, I guess they call them. But of course, all biased towards display or hiding of text, showing or hiding links, performing basic calculations. Although I did see a full math library in there. This is like an entire language, but in a web browser. Has anybody done anything really unusual with it then?
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, Leon Arnott is the guy who sort of worked on that. And I think when you're looking at the documentation, that's stuff that he put together. And to be honest, when I first, you know, when we were working on this, it was something that was created as part of the version 2. And it was sort of in general like an opportunity now that Twine had really grown a community to look back on it and see like, well, where has it been successful? What are the pain points, basically? Stuff like that. And so I was like, Leon, like, you've done a really great job with extending what was in this old stuff. If you had to come up with your own sort of setup, what would it look like? And he comes back with this very, you know, very elaborate, sophisticated idea. And I'm like, go for it, buddy. Because it was a very ambitious design. And I'm impressed with, you know, like the level at what it is providing and how far and how successful it's been. Yeah, because I was like, huh. Like cosine, like I don't know what I would do with a cosine function in a story, but maybe if I'm like targeting a cannon or something like that, I don't know. But it's nice that it's there. And I mean, like, it's tough to say, like, I think there haven't been as many, or I'm not aware of as many sort of like super hacky things that people have done that have been like this, like, I don't even know how this was done. But I think it's more sort of in service of the storytelling, to be honest. And so, like, a lot of it, obviously, I mean, that's sort of the point, is that it for the most part, it kind of fades into the background when you're having, like, a narrative experience when you're reading. Just like in the way when you're reading a book, you're not necessarily, unless you're a super typography nerd like me, you're not like, this font is really good.
Yeah. Since it is Turing complete, could someone effectively implement a colossal cave in it? And has anybody done that?
Yes. And I have seen people it's possible. And I've seen people working on stuff that has a complicated world model behind it. I don't know, like, again, the stuff I've seen is mostly, really, it's sort of at the toy level, I guess, where it's like, ooh, I figured out how to do like a particularly interesting simulation of this one aspect, but I have not seen a full-fledged colossal cave implementation in Twine. That would be impressive. That would be an achievement unto itself. I mean, just the dedication, again, because that's the hard part, though. I mean, sort of more seriously, it's just that it's true, though, that choice-based stuff and parser-based stuff, again, the type-in stuff versus you're picking, like, what happens next, that stuff, it has different strengths and weaknesses. And so it's sort of like, man, you can make this, like, you can make this, I'm trying to think of a good metaphor. You can make something that can't fly very well fly, but it may not be the most graceful thing on earth, basically.
Well, it's like the whole point of a flying car really is not what anybody ever envisions it to be, because it's going to be a really poor airplane. It's going to be a really poor car. So it's the worst of both worlds, not the best of both worlds. But just along that vein, and then I've got a whole bunch of other areas I want to cover real quick before we run out of time. We're starting to get closer to the end of the show. So, yes, if there's any way to have any kind of text input, it turns out Colossal Cave's parser, of course, written in old classic Fortran, wasn't that sophisticated. So I imagine it probably would not be hard to write. What's the back end written in? I mean, I'm typing in the language that it's then eventually interpreting, at least the default engine. What is that written in?
JavaScript. And so everything, or Twine is nowadays basically JavaScript, both in the editor and the runtime. It all has to run in a web browser, obviously. So it needs to use JavaScript to do so. And so that was part of the big change in version 2, was to make it with the web-based stuff, was that we moved it from a Python app to a JavaScript-based one. Nowadays, we use a library called Vue, for all the sort of the underlying stuff and whole host of libraries and stuff like that. But it's all JavaScript underneath.
That's actually surprising. I actually thought there was some server-side things, but now that I'm thinking about it, yeah, it's running in my browser, so it has to have stuff that works arbitrarily that way. So in a couple of the links you sent, one of them was an interesting story about how this has gotten, I'm going to try to say this politically correctly, more women involved, seemingly, that the number of the interactive fiction stories are women-authored is... And you had some thoughts on that about why that is, or?
Wow.
No.
Well, first of all, I'm super happy, honestly, that Twine has become this force for diversity in games and tech in general. And I think, you know, obviously there is a huge transgender community also that has adopted Twine. And that is really cool too. As to why, I don't know. I mean, perhaps I think maybe the answer might lie in the fact that it is accessible in general to, I hope at least that it's accessible to a large audience. And whether that happens to be male, female, whatever ethnicity, like, you know, it doesn't require quite the same, I guess, CS background that perhaps like other more, like I hesitate to say sophisticated because that's a little bit tricky of a word here. But like perhaps technically complex engines and frameworks and so forth. Because obviously, like, you know, the comparison I like to draw is to Unity, which is obviously a very popular game engine as well. And relatively accessible in the grand scheme of things compared to other older stuff where you had to do a lot of programming just to see anything on screen. But the truth is, in my opinion anyway, that Unity has a ton of requirements right out of the gate. There's a lot to master. You know what I mean? It's sort of in the same way that if you put somebody in front of like a Photoshop app or something like that, like they're not going to be producing amazing stuff with it right out of the gate. You know, I remember actually the first time I ever saw Photoshop, I was like, wait, how do I draw boxes in this? Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, obviously they eventually added a box tool. But hey, before that, you had to learn, you know, the ins and outs of the tools. And I think Twine in general is something that you can kind of that can be used successfully by everybody. And so that's, I think that's really cool that everybody now includes women, you know, just a whole, you know, the whole gamut of people and experiences and walks of life and stuff like that.
Well, one of the things I see here that makes it interesting, at least in terms of, is the notion of gradual programming skills, because you can start out with treating it strictly as a wiki. You know, I have this page, I have these two choices. This takes me to this other page, this takes me to this other page. But then you go, oh, well, I want to make sure they visited the waterfall before they get over to this place. And so you start to gradually introduce the notions of state and state changing and state checking and things like that. And then you start getting more complicated things like inventory and being able to have, you know, a collection of things that you're picking up and carrying around. It looks like, you know, the languages of Twine seem to do this in a pretty straightforward way with this sort of incremental learnability. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one of the strengths of Twine in general, is that, like you were saying, like, you don't have to write any code to produce a Twine game, which some people view as a bad thing, which I think is kind of funny. But when it's right, when you're ready to try to do this, like, you're exactly, the use case you're describing is exactly what I had in mind, is that as you want to build a more complicated story, you start to learn about, like, well, what's a variable and what's a conditional and, you know, that kind of thing. And with inventory, then you start thinking like, oh, what's an array, you know? And all of a sudden, like, these ideas that can be very abstract, if they're presented that way, start to actually have some tangibility. And I mean, I think it's something that you know, like in sort of educational contexts. That's a kind of a, it's a tried and true approach to learning something is that, well, A, in general, learners do better when they see a reason why to learn something in the first place,
right.
But also, you know, scaffolding people up so that, you know, right out of the gate, they have something that, you know, is playable that they can show their friends and be proud of. And then, you know, from that initial success, just keep building on it as opposed to the, okay, time to, you know, sit down and hit the books and learn C. And then a couple months later, perhaps you'll have something that you can show to your friend or weeks later, even days later, if you're super smart, I guess. But you know what I mean?
Yeah. And one of the other things I saw in one of the articles you sent along, and by the way, all these articles I'm referring to will be in the show notes that'll be on the webpage for this thing, which is not in itself a Twine game. It's just going to be a description of this. choose your own twit thing. All right. Is the idea that you can create games with this that, of course, run in web browsers. That means you could then use with, you know, Android and iOS apps or with interaction devices that would be material that would be questionable in terms of actually building a real app for it. And that's let more authors express more of what they want to produce with it. Do you have any comment on that?
Very specifically, I chose when I was thinking about the web-based version of Twine that I wanted it to be self-contained. And in the sense of that, when you create something in Twine, even though you're on a website, I don't store anything server-side. It's all stored in your browser, which obviously mm-hmm. has some downsides to it. You accidentally, if you delete your internet history by accident, your story's gone, which is obviously a bad user experience story. At the same time, I really don't think that it was not a position I wanted to put myself into where I was like, I don't want to be a gatekeeper on content. I don't really want to try to judge things, whether it's appropriate or not. You know, that's not a business that I personally want to be into or be in.
Sure.
And so I wanted to be sort of quasi decentralized in that sense and give people the freedom to do whatever they like with it. And that was always sort of an underlying theory or thinking behind it is that, you know, I very specifically wanted it to output to HTML because HTML is a format that you can read in pretty much any browser, obviously, or on any computing platform. Or whatever. It's as universal as I think it gets almost. And, you know, that same idea is that, yeah, you can then adapt it if you wanted to. And people have, in fact, published games on the iOS store and Android that are based on or that use Twine as the engine. And that's totally a viable option. But it's not mandatory by any means.
Right. I guess all you need to do is publish an app that has a WebKit or whatever the equivalent is on the, Chrome on the Android side. One other thing, and then I know Aaron's got a couple more quick questions. This seems like it could also be used for practical applications, not just entertainment. I'm thinking of all these troubleshooting guides that you can get from, you know, like you're trying to figure out how come your television, you know, your HDTV isn't all hooked up correctly, right? And they say first step, make sure you got power. Then do you have power? Then go to step two. Or if you see the signal on this, then go to step three. Sounds like the kind of thing that could be implemented using Twine. Has anybody done anything practical like this in terms of like a troubleshooting guide or a instruction manual for something?
Sort of, I guess I'll say. I think you're right. Like in general, like any kind of interactive tutorial or I guess troubleshooter, like you were saying, that makes sense. Like anything that has sort of a nonlinear path that makes sense to it, that you could build in Twine. The applications I've seen with it are more, I hesitate to use the word serious, more complicated. basically, it's for like online training and stuff like that. I think people have shown an interest in building online almost like assessments with it, where, you know, I can give you an example from my day job, actually, where there was sort of a case study that was part of a course where I work at a university that in particular in the healthcare field. And so there's a patient that appears with these particular symptoms, and you can order up various different tests to be run in any sequence, really, right? Because it starts to edge into the area of simulation. So you can look at the test results, make a determination of like, well, I think this is the particular condition that this person is suffering from, and kind of play out a whole scenario through that. And I think, you know, you can do that kind of thing regardless of the subject matter. Like, that sort of interactive scenario makes a lot of sense here. And it really is one of those things that it's hard to do in real life. Like, obviously you can't practice on a patient in real life, hopefully, at least at the stage of these students were at. But at the same time, you know, it's something that gives people useful experience that they can then apply in real life. That kind of thing, I think, has a lot of possibility with swine in the future, too.
Yeah, I also see, like, I've been thinking about this, and, you know, along what you guys were just talking about, there's also, like, sales tools, and we all hate them, at least I assume we do. I don't think there's anybody out there that enjoys this process when, you know, the sales guy calls you or girl calls you, and they say, you know, you can tell they're reading a script off their monitor, right? And you tell them something, and then they'll say, you kind of hear a click in the background, and then they go to the next thing. But actually, I mean, this could be a really good way to implement that. I know there are other tools out there to do that, but I mean, it seems like there's a lot of could be a lot of commercial uses for this technology as well. Do you agree?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And I mean, there have been. A lot of them are sort of behind NDAs and stuff like that. So they're not sort of visible or as visible to the outside world. But yeah, absolutely. It's something that, and because there is no license or anything like that, well, there is a license, it's GPL. But you don't have to ask me for permission to use Twine or pay me money to use it. I don't necessarily hear about it as often, but I do hear sort of rumblings from the corporate world that it is being used in a lot of different circumstances.
Is that something that you've looked at in terms of providing some funding to keep the project going? How do you fund this? Is it just something you do on the side?
It's mostly volunteers. I have a Patreon myself that where people, if they want to be a supporter of Twine, they can sign up, and I basically rate it by the release cadence so that it's not like a monthly thing like a lot of Patreon, so that if I end up taking a break from Twine, my supporters don't have to fork out money for it. But that's sort of at least the main funding source right now, at least for myself. I can't really speak for the other people working on the project, but to circle back to that October show that you guys did, Twine is in the process of becoming a project that's under the umbrella of the IF Tech Foundation, and under it, which is a 501c3 nonprofit, I believe. And so that's sort of, I think, where the direction I want to go into as far as funding goes, is to look for grants and stuff like that, and other sorts of, you know, sponsorship and that kind of thing, the kinds of things that are possible through a nonprofit. Because there was a moment where, you know, when I was thinking about this version too, it was like, you know, a lot of people have gone down the road of, you know, open source initially, then create a new version and make it commercial. But I thought that just was not going to be a good idea. Just because I thought it would be sort of untrue to the spirit of Twine, because the people who were adopting it in the first place really did so, because it was open source, it was free, and also B, like, did not impose great restrictions on what you created with it or anything like that. And I wanted to stay true to that.
Yeah. I mean, just so people understand, I think that, so what you said is exactly what this show is all about. But are there commercial alternatives to this? Because when I was doing some searching while you were talking to Randall, it seems like most of the tools out there, and it looks like Twine is one of the more popular ones by far, but it looks like most of them are open source tools. Are there must be commercial products that would compete with Twine, right?
The one I'm aware of, I believe, is either just called Axma or something else with the word Axma in it. I'm not super well versed in it, to be honest. I know that it exists. The other one I should also, it's much bigger actually now that I'm thinking of it, is a application called StorySpace, and it has its roots in the 80s, actually. It was back in the day, like an original Macintosh application that was designed to specifically build hypertext, and has continued to be around and be maintained. And that's a commercial piece of software that I believe is only for, I guess I want to say Mac OS nowadays.
Hmm. You know, it sounds like this is the kind of thing that people in the early days would have used HyperCard for. Maybe that's sort of what you're referencing there, the commercial version of HyperCard that eventually followed on. We're almost out of time. A couple things I wanted to cover real quick is what's on the roadmap here? I mean, it sounds like you've got a functionally featureful release already in the 2.0 release. What are you still missing, and what kinds of talent would you like to attract to the organization, to your volunteer base, to be able to deliver that?
Oh, sure. I mean, I think that what we were talking about earlier, the multi-user access or having some sort of way to collaborate would be huge. And it's, yeah, to be honest, like it's a small group of people working on this. And if it could definitely use all the help it can get. I try to recruit at wherever I am, basically. And because it is a very small project, like on the manpower side, as it were. And really, so our stack is pretty modern, I would say. Like, I mean, we're using Vue. We're using Babel and writing, you know, cutting-edge-ish JavaScript, all that good stuff. So I think that's sort of the pitch I try to make to people is that this is a chance, like, if you are interested in the web dev world and you're interested in, like, you know, especially the JavaScript end, this is a good chance to build some concrete, experience with it. It's a relatively small application, so it's pretty easy to dive in, honestly. I hope so anyway. And so that's a really good opportunity in that respect. It also, you know, the collaborative aspect would have a huge impact on the community as a whole. And that's something that, I think in general, I have some server-side expertise, but nowadays I'm more of a front-end guy. And so, you know, if you do have experience in writing server-side Node or even Python or whatever, I'm actually pretty open about open to ideas as far as what to do server-side. And that would be great to have people on the team, honestly, also, that could kind of provide that kind of that help and that experience, that kind of thing.
Okay. And is there any questions we didn't ask you that you wanted to make sure our audience was aware of before we have to let you go?
Oh, I guess just the new 2.1 version came out just last week. So we're now at 2.1. Yeah. And the main thing is it is super fast now compared to how it used to be for larger projects. We started it as a thing that was really, you know, like that we were building test projects, you know, as you do when you're building something out for the first time. And now people have really adopted it. And I, you know, discovered that, hey, it tended to bog down on bigger stuff. And we took a lot, like 2.1 was mainly about that, actually, was fixing that up. So, yeah, I'm trying to think if there's anything else. I already said, yeah, the basic thing. So just to kind of reiterate, when you build something with Twine, it comes out as an HTML file. And you can put that wherever you like. There is a dedicated hosting service for Twine Stories called Philomela. Maybe we can stick that in the show notes maybe or something afterwards, because the URL is a little bit funny. But if you have web hosting of your own, like on NeoCities or, you know, you paid money to somebody, you can just throw it up there. It doesn't require any extra server-side installation or anything like that. It's very kind of plug-and-play.
Awesome. And my two required questions, or else I'll get screamed at literally by my, well, not literally, they're not actually going to come to my room and go, screamed at as well as you can in all caps. What text editor do you spend all your day in?
I am so glad you asked me this question at the end of the show, because I feel like you probably kick me off you're going to want to kick me off when I tell you the answer. so I used to be like a Vim guy for like 3-4 years or something like that, but I just started using Visual Studio Code, not like the full-fledged Visual Studio, but the Electron-based version of it. And it's really good, as it turns out, for at least for me, for my use case, because it has a lot of facilities for JavaScript and stuff like that.
I've heard really good things about that. In fact, I even have it downloaded and installed somewhere here, and I've probably had it operating for all of like 20 minutes. So it's not like I have a lot of experience with it. But I don't mind that one. That's actually, it's funny what's coming out of Redmond these days, a lot more sensible stuff. So I'm pretty happy with some of the ways that they've gone. And we're actually going to get probably some people from up north there to on this show talk a little bit more about what they're actually doing these days. And then also I'm kind of guessing your favorite scripting language is probably something that starts with a J, but you can answer that one for me.
Actually, no. My favorite scripting language is Lua.
well, that's okay too.
I got into it because there are a couple game engines that use Lua for scripting, and I didn't know anything about it, and I got really excited by it. And it, to me, like, Lua is a Java, like, it's kind of like JavaScript, the good parts, basically. I don't know that it's faster than JavaScript anymore, just because so much effort has been put on optimizing JavaScript. But to me, Lua has a lot more sensible design, just by virtue of the fact that although things have changed in the recent past, I think JavaScript was originally designed in, like, 3 weeks or something like that. So it has its warts, whereas Lua, I find, is a more elegant kind of design.
Well, I really appreciate the work that you've put in and coordinating and producing Twine, because I think this is really enabling a lot of people to build these kinds of applications, descriptions, stories, you know, tell their great American novel, their great American interactive novel, I should say, because telling a great American novel just requires, you know, WordPress or something like that, or whatever. That's dating myself there, but it's something like that. So I really appreciate you coming on the show and talking about Twine. I know a lot of people are probably going to want to go play with it right now, which is really cool. And thanks for coming on the show.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Very good. That was Chris Klimas, the Grand Poobah of the Twine organization. What do you think, Aaron?
Grand Poobah, indeed. I haven't heard that one in a while. No, this is really cool. As you can tell, I'm always thinking about ways to incorporate this kind of stuff. I think it could be really good. I love what you said before about being kind of a gateway, right? I'm always looking for those things for new makers, people that want to do things, but they don't know programming, or they're looking for something to get started or to sink their teeth into. I think this is a really easy thing that people would enjoy doing, especially kids. I can see kids getting really into this. And as an educational tool, I think it would be really interesting as well. I think they're doing great. I think it's a great thing. I think people should definitely check it out. I know I'm going to check it out. And again, if they can make this multi-user, man, I think it really could be a game changer.
Well, there's a lot of technology around that already. You know, like the way, for example, Dropbox or any of the other sort of shared disks things sort of deal with multiple changes to the same range of data. Interactive text editors that can have multiple cursors on the screen, like say Google Docs, where you're both editing the same exact document, things like that. So the technology is definitely there. There's a lot of good open source implementations of that. So it's a matter of bringing this to Twine to be able to have multiple editors. So I'm hoping that somebody can get that all worked out. So, well, actually, that may be you. That may be you, the audience listening to this, can be the kind of person that would help bring that to the equation. But we got to move on. We're almost out of time here. So we do have a couple more shows still lined up. Gadgetron is next week. That's the medical image reconstruction software. So open source software to take proprietary ones and zeros that come off your images of your body and things like that, to be able to draw those and make those pretty and things like that. Immediately following that, we're revisiting Arduino. So we talked to Arduino back in 2009. A lot of stuff has happened, I guess, in the ensuing 8 years. So we'll get them on to talk about where Arduino is going, where Arduino has been, and things like that. I don't have anybody else on the schedule right now. I am sending out flurries of emails to try to book everything. So hopefully by the time we do next week's show, I'll have a few more people to talk about. But you can see how I'm doing by going to twit.tv/floss, which is the homepage for this show. The big spreadsheet is linked there, so we can. If you have any suggestions that aren't there, please have the project leader or community coordinator email me, merlin@stoneinge.com. We do a live stream at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time on Tuesdays as we tape this show at live.twit.tv. You can follow along with us, see the mistakes we make behind the scenes. That's always kind of fun. And also suggest questions for our guests. We always love that when that happens. You can follow us on Floss Weekly on Google+, and also at Floss Weekly on Twitter. You can follow me me at Randall L. Schwartz on Google+, and that also tweets over to Merlyn, M-E-R-L-Y-N, on Twitter. I'm going to be at a few conferences coming up. We're going to be at the Southern California Linux Expo in just 5 or 6 weeks, I think it is. And I'm also going to be at YAPSE, Yet Another Pearl Conference, and also going to be at OSCON in Austin. So also hopefully DragonCon and FizzLay, but more on that when that actually happens. Any quick things you want to plug, Aaron?
Well, there are lots of things going on. Benicia Mini Maker Faire is coming up. That's something we do here. So if you're in Northern California and you want to, right now we opened up our call for makers about 2 weeks ago, which is how you can get involved. You have to fill out this little form and say what you want to do. But if you're a hobbyist and you live in the area, and you want to bring up a catapult or a drone or electronics project or a craft thing that you do and show it off to other people, this is a great way to do that. And you can find out more about that at BenishaMakerFaire.com. BenishaMakerFaire, all one word, .com. And also go to Amazon and pre-order Linux for Makers. It's my new book. It's going to come out hopefully, I think maybe March timeframe. We're just kind of wrapping things up now and getting really close to saying this thing's done. Definitely keep your eye on that. If you want to learn more, if you're new to making or, you know, you're kind of hesitant to use Linux, like a lot of people are, they're not familiar with it. Pick up the book and get your hands dirty. You'll learn a lot.
I'm surprised you haven't sent me a copy of that so I can test it out, sir.
If you want to, kind of the review process is over at this point. I mean, we're like crossing the I's and dotting the T's, as they say. I will send you a signed copy, Randall, soon as they come out.
Awesome. I would appreciate that. It's signed electronic copy. Will it fit on my Kindle?
That's yes. Yes, it will. But it won't be signed electronically. It'll be signed physically. So you have to send me all your right. Kindle. I'll get out my Sharpie and sign the screen. That's okay, right?
No, not at all. Oh. Well, Aaron, thank you very much again for stepping in at the last minute and for contributing your particular point of view, which is really kind of useful, because we're going to see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.